Hello and welcome to Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
Aloha! This is Jason from Hawaii. Welcome to a retailer spotlight for the Comic Book Page Podcast. In this episode, I interviewed Julius Idano, owner of Westside Comics and Games. Now, we did this interview last year, December 2017. And I'm sorry, it took me a while to get this out to John. So that was my bad. So I'm sorry about that, guys. So now, without any further ado, here's my interview with my good friend, Julius Idano of Westside Comics and Games. Aloha, guys. This is Jason from Hawaii. I'm here at Westside Comics and Games, and I'm here with my good friend, Julius Idano. So, before we start the interview, I'm interviewing him during, his shop during store hours. So, it's like I'm going to be stopping this interview every so often as he helps customers. So, just like I said, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. So, without any further ado, here is Julius Idano. Julius, how you doing?
How's it going, everybody?
All right. So, Julius, I'm going to say, can you give out the store's name, address, phone number, and social platform?
Well, we are Westside Comics and Games, located at 590 Farrington Highway, Unit 538. That's in the Kapolei Marketplace in Kapolei, Hawaii.
And what about where can people reach you guys on social media?
Oh, yeah, certainly. We're on Facebook, so Westside Comics and Games, Westside being one word. We also have a website at www.westsidecomicsandgames.com. For right now, those are the only active media sites that we maintain.
Okay. And then how long has the store been open, Julius?
Well, we opened in 2013, August of 2013, so about 4 years now.
So basically next year you guys will make it 5 years then.
Yes. Yeah. We'll actually be doing some special stuff next year for our 50-year anniversary. So.
Okay. And then if you don't mind me asking, can you describe your store?
Well, we're a fairly small shop, and we're located in a suburban area of Oahu. The store is about one-third comics, two-thirds games. So games do get a lot more play here in the shop. But as an aficionado of comics myself, I wanted to make sure that we had people who lived on this side of the island that had a way of getting comic books Mm-hmm. That way, I don't have to drive too far to get them myself.
And if you don't mind me asking, how big is your staff over here?
Well, it's a small shop. It's 800 square feet, and we do have myself and two part-time employees that work here, and that's it.
Oh, okay, all right. Now, just to get some street cred, I'm going to ask, what was the first comic you read?
I actually remember that very well. Captain America 175.
Do you remember the story on that?
Yes, that was when Captain America engaged the Secret Empire, and that's where he was, where the Secret Empire guy revealed himself to Captain America. I don't know why, but that sticks out in my mind.
And it's kind of ironic because this year that they did the Secret Empire series, right?
Yes, that is quite funny. So yeah, no. It's good stuff. And then, after that, it was all downhill. There's tons of different comics after that. So.
How long have you been a comic book fan?
Well, I read that comic, I think, when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I have been a fan of comic books ever since. So as a hobby, I've been doing it forever. I'm not really a big investor. I don't buy comics to increase, to hold it for value, but mm-hmm. I buy them because I like to read them. And if they end up having some value later on, that's, power to me.
Currently, what's your favorite comic or comic book series right now?
Right now, I'd have to say Batman. Mm-hmm. I haven't been a Batman fan for very long as far as comic book reading. But lately, the stories have been just wonderful. Things that would make a great TV series. Hear that, DC?
And I'm just trying to clarify, this is the Tom King run, is that correct?
Yes, that would be correct, yes.
All right. And then Are you, what is it that you like about this current Batman run?
Well, the thing I like the most about the run is it really delves into the characters' souls a lot more, personalities. A lot of, you know, a very good writing. I mean, things that, even if it were not Batman or Catwoman, I think had you seen that in an episode of Game of Thrones, you would have found it entertaining. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's good writing.
Okay. And then, you know, what did you do before you opened the store? What was your job? Yeah, before you opened up your dream job.
My life before the shop was completely different. I was actually in lending and finance. I had run a credit union for about one single credit union for close to 10 years, but all together in the financial industry about just over 20 years worth. Mm-hmm. But yes, I was very glad to finally open the shop.
Mm-hmm. And then also too, I know before we started the interview, we were talking about, you know, like that you had your own eBay store, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Before the shop, I had a lot of practice selling stuff by selling it on eBay, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then how long did you do that?
Well, I did that for maybe 6 or 7 years before I opened the shop. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, not very, it was an eBay store, but mostly I sold HeroClix figures, you know, collectible figures, gaming figures, not statuettes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And some comics. So mm-hmm. that was mean. Almost the same ratio of how I'm selling it now, about 1/3 comics, maybe 2/3 in gaming merchandise.
Now, you know, your experience as a manager in finance, in like a financial institution, and also like having your eBay store, did that help you prepare you for the job, for the store?
Well, it did a little bit. And certainly running, working in the financial world was very helpful, and having been a manager in a regular 9-to-5 type job did teach you a lot of skills about how to operate a business, just generically, you know, like accounting and mm-hmm. marketing and things like that. And the eBay store gave me a good feel for, like, you know, what people were interested in as far as, like pop items that people would be interested in. But of course, actually running the store is a completely different world. Mm-hmm. The local, and it's very localized, you know, okay. Because the local community has needs here and desires here. Like some of the games that work well here may not work even in other parts of just this island. Mm-hmm. So, but it's kind of interesting to see the differences. Mm-hmm.
So. Okay. And that part, I think we're going to cover that just a little bit later on in the interview. I'm going to ask you, so what made you follow your dream to open up your own store?
I think my mother can tell you that. I talked from a way, way back about opening a store. I think the first time I actually voiced the desire to open a store was back in high school. And I had mentioned it to my mother a long time ago, and I think at the time she was, you know, she didn't try to dissuade me from doing it, but mm-hmm. I don't think she was enthusiastically trying to support me either. I think she was preferring that I became a doctor or a lawyer, like all good mothers do. So, but yeah, it's a dream I've always wanted to do. Partly because growing up as a child, all of these interests, all of the things that I sell here were things that were so important to me. They were such a big part of my life, and they kept me away from very bad things. You know, you know, when you play a game like Warhammer 40K, where mm-hmm. To start an army will cost you $500-$600. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have time for drugs, or you don't have money for drugs, because you want to get that money to get the games going. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I stayed away. I didn't do gangs. I didn't do drugs. You know, so it helped me a lot. And I think, you know, even if I can help a few people, a few young kids to stay away from drugs and find something more rewarding to do, then mm-hmm. yeah, that's great. Then I've saved somebody.
Yeah. So okay, so back in high school, like you have to refresh my memory. So was this like Dungeon and Dragon games? I can't remember. Yeah,
I actually, since I grew up, graduated 1983. since I grew up with middle school being in the late 70s, my interests originally were in military gaming, like military style board games. I guess you know, starting with games like Risk and then working my way up to more complicated games like Advanced Squad Leader and things like that. Things that, you know, that have 300-page rule books now. So I started with that. And then eventually I gravitated to other stuff. And Dungeons & Dragons did play an early part of my gaming life because that was also very important. Because that, you know, when you play a board game, it's typically just me and one other person. But when you play Dungeons & Dragons, now you're talking about me and six other people. And, you know, the social, that was my socialization. That's how I socialized. So.
Wow, that's pretty good. Yeah. And then, I know we're going to talk about the gaming, that gaming part a little bit later on. So, yeah, so I'll touch more upon on that later. And then, when you open the store, or actually I should say, let me go back. When did you finally actually make the decision to go, hey, I want to open a store?
I probably made that decision about maybe late 2011. So about a year and a half maybe before the shop opened. And it was just, you know, I had a yearning to do something different. And I had considered like applying for a different position, doing a different, working at a different credit union. But then, you know, it occurred to me that that would just be a change of scenery, but it would be the same old job that I'd been doing for 20 something years. And in the back of my head, there'd always been this yearning to do what I've always wanted to do. I knew I was going to open a game store for a long time. And originally, it was something I was going to do. I had thought originally that it was something I was going to do when I retired. But then the yearning was very strong. So, it, you know, then I looked into the you know, studied the feasibility of it, and I go, you know, it's feasible. So, said open.
And then, now I'm going to describe to our listeners basically we're like on the, on the Kapolei side, more the west side of the island of
Definitely
Oahu.
Definitely west side, yes.
Okay. I'm going to ask, so, how did you decide to choose this location?
Well, one of the things, one of the objectives of opening the shop is because there's other shops already spread out around the island. But one of the objectives was to be able to provide this kind of stuff to people where it's not easily accessible to them. You know, everybody who lives out on this side to reach one of the other game shops would have to drive at least an hour to get to town. And, you know, if you want to just buy a bottle of paint, you know, you don't want to drive an hour just to get it. And so that's, you know, the one of the things that motivated me to look at doing it out here.
And I'm going to say to our listeners, when we mean town, we're talking, you know, Honolulu, like the main city on Oahu. But no, yeah, I understand because I live in IA. You know, if I want to go to, when I used to go to the comic shops, it took me like 30 minutes, you know, even 45 minutes, depending on traffic.
Absolutely. So, yeah, this makes it easier for people. I mean, you got to imagine that's, I'm just talking about driving to town from here. We have a lot of customers from Waianae, which is a community 30, 45 minutes past here. So those guys have to go to town. We're talking at least an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, depending on traffic. So, you know, if you just, and we, as we all know, I mean, comic books is something that you really got to go to your comic book shop weekly. You don't want to be driving 2 hours weekly just to buy your comic books.
You know, and that's perfect because that's going to lead me into my next section of the question. It's like, you know, how are you attracting customers now besides word of mouth or your regular customers? How else are you reaching new customers?
Well, word of mouth is still our main way of getting the word out. As you know, it's a very niche market, and broad-based advertising really doesn't work very well. At this level, you know, it's certainly where we're at. So, but we, in addition to that, we do a lot of social media. We're very active on Facebook. We do a lot of stuff there. One of the things that we did recently, which also was successful, was we tied in with the local movie theater. And they ran advertising for us at the theaters in front, you know, in front of a couple of big blockbuster type movies like Wonder Woman, for example. But we do rely on word of mouth a lot, so you know that's why it's very important for us to take care of our customers because you know they're the ones who are going to be our source of advertising.
Yeah, yeah,
and it works. It works well. So,
And then I'm going to ask, so that's great that you're using the local theaters to advertise. I'm going to ask, so like the theaters, are you looking on this side of the island or is it more island-wide?
Yes, just this side of the island. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that made it practical was it was just on this side of the island. So, you know, we're talking about one chain of theaters only. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't impractical for us to do it. Besides, you know, being in town, you have other sources, other ways to get your games or your comics. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know, they're not the customer we're really catering to. We want to make sure that we cater to the people who live out here. So that's the ones we're trying to make sure that they're aware mm-hmm. that we're here and ready to serve them. So,
yeah. I'm just asking, you know, those advertisements in theaters, did that help? Did that bring in some foot traffic?
It did. And there was a special program that we had signed up with DC Comics, where they essentially funded a portion of our advertising as long as we did it for, you know, for their movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm okay with that. So yeah. So that's why a lot of the advertising went out because of the timing of it. It went out with Wonder Woman,
mm-hmm.
And it did especially because it was co-opted by DC. The cost for us was relatively small, you know, cheaper than even radio advertising.
Wow.
And it worked. We have tried radio advertising in the past, and just for us, it wasn't successful,
mm-hmm.
Again, relative to the cost. But mm-hmm. this was less than radio advertising, and it brought in some customers. Yeah. So like, we were very happy with that.
And plus also, too, it's more of a visual medium instead of radio, right?
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes, most definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People like that. People react better to sight and sound.
Oh, yeah. And that's great that they ran it in front of Wonder Woman. Did they do it in front of Justice League or anything?
Unfortunately, everything had ended by the time Justice League came out. But yeah, we did have a good run earlier in the year, so.
Oh, okay. Well, no, but that's good, though. That's really good. I'm going to go back to one of the questions. Like, when you opened the store, you know, did you have, like, certain goals when you opened the shop? Like, you want to make sure that customer service is a priority. Did you have those types of goals or anything?
Well, I think anybody that does that should be having those kinds of goals. I mean, there's obvious, you know, we're not in this for charity. So, mm-hmm. you know, we are a money-making business. We do have to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the, you know, the overriding concerns. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, taking care of people, because it all ties in together. If you don't mm-hmm. take care of people, they're not going to patronize your shop. So, so we got some of that going on. I think customer service and customer care is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And so that inevitably does tie into everything.
Okay. Guys, we're going to stop here for a minute. I'm going to let Julius help a customer out, and then we'll get back to you shortly. Thank you. All right, guys. Thank you for waiting. Now we're back. You know, before our little break, we were talking, you know, just a little bit about customer service and attracting customers. So, Julius, you know, what's your customer base here at the store?
Well, the customer base here is predominantly, I guess, suburban mm-hmm. Oahuites. there are people who live out on this side of the island.
Mm-hmm.
So they're far removed from where the where a lot of the comic and game shops are. So it's a long drive for them. There's no real economic, you know, I mean, I guess you could say that we're also closer to a rather underdeveloped part of the community, but you know, I don't really see that here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and again, because of the focus of the store, we deliberately wanted to make sure that we were the kind of shop that parents could bring their children to, and
well,
that people would be comfortable with children in mm-hmm. here. So we try very hard to make sure that we, you know, we have that kind of a feel or vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the shop's very well lit. There's no dark corners, no mm-hmm. nothing like that. You know, we definitely dissuade people from, you know, swearing or using profanity in the shop while they're playing games and mm-hmm. things like that. So, we get a lot of parents, a lot of kids.
Okay.
You know, and that's good because we want them to get into the hobby of playing games and collecting comics and reading comics, you know, at mm-hmm. an early age, like me.
And then also, too, your customer base is also, you have, people from the surrounding military base, is that correct?
Yes, that's actually true because we're very close to Schofield Army mm-hmm. Barracks, which is the local army base.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of our customers come from there.
Mm-hmm.
not so much the comic book people. I think for comic books, we get most of our comic book shoppers are local residents from the immediately surrounding areas. But a lot of our gamers most definitely come from Schofield.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So like when they come, when your military customers come in, like you said, they're mostly gamers. What type of products do they normally buy? You know, gaming products.
Well, there's a variety of games, but I would have to say that for our shop, probably the number one game would be the Warhammer 40K series of games. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get into that. Magic the Gathering, can't mm-hmm. go wrong with that. A lot mm-hmm. of people are Magic the Gathering, the only game that we have enough of a customer base where we can support having an event weekly. Mm-hmm. And then a smattering of other games. D&D. D&D is a very popular game. The only thing that's unusual about D&D is it tends to be small groups of people. Mm-hmm. So you'll have a guy come in here with his buddies. You know, they'll buy the books that they need to buy,
yeah.
leave, and then we'll never see them again for months. You know, it's not like there's tournaments for D&D where they can show up every month to play. So, yeah. you know, where we get that with the 40K guys, we'll have tournaments mm-hmm. and then we'll see our regular customers, our familiar faces mm-hmm. come in to play in tournaments and stuff. So, definitely Schofield is a big plus to us, though, and we're very happy to help them. And they're very good to us. The military guys are some of your, for any place, I believe, the military people are some of your best customers. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. Okay. And then, because I remember from a previous conversation that we had one time with that, for the military customers, when they come in for the Warhammer 40K, because there's like a lot of figures and stuff that they normally buy, right? Yes. So what else do they buy?
Well, Warhammer 40K, you know, with the joke that we tell people here is if you're interested in 40K, it's not just a game, it's a lifestyle. You know, there's a lot that goes into the game, and it can be very intimidating if you're mm-hmm. not, you know, if you're not familiar with it. So one of the things that we do to help people out is, you know, we're here to give you advice. We'll tell you what you need to start out with. You know, you don't have to just randomly buy mm-hmm. boxes. You know, we'll tell you, okay, well, this army fights this way. So, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. look at the colors. You like this color? Then if you like this color, this mm-hmm. is the army for you.
Yeah.
And then we'll walk him through what kinds of materials he needs to, mm-hmm. to start up his army with. And, mm-hmm. and then, and the bit, one of the biggest advantages of a gaming shop is that once he's got himself ready and he can start playing, there's a place he can go to meet people who also play the game with him in case he doesn't have immediate friends who mm-hmm. also play the game. So, you know, that's one of the services that we provide, mm-hmm. really, is a place to play. So,
right. Okay. And then that part, I'm going to go a little bit later in the interview about that. I'm just going to come back to talking about the comics that you sell here for a bit. What comics do you carry? Like, I know you carry Marvel, DC.
We predominantly carry Marvel and DC stuff. There is a small smattering of some other titles, like Walking Dead, because it's so popular. Mm-hmm. Saga, it's also another very popular book. But for the by and large, we only stock on the shelf Marvel and DC superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, I do bring in other books for subscribers. You know, so certainly we do that service for people. So if we do have, I've brought in GFT, you know, mm-hmm. Grimm's Fairy Tales and stuff.
Yeah.
I've brought in some stuff from Boom Studios mm-hmm. specifically for customers. But generally speaking, I don't stock those on the shelf. Mm-hmm. You know, again, since we're predominantly a game store, The comics that we sell here are geared towards the most popular titles, the ones that your common, average, everyday person who's just seen the Avengers movie will come and look for. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. So I'm just asking. So, like, let's say the Justice League movie that just came out, you know, did you have at least some foot traffic coming in asking for Justice League comics?
For the most part, yes. Typically, you'll see a boom in activity for most of the different superhero things, like not just Justice League, but TV shows as well. So, people have been coming in looking for Iron Fist, for you know Luke Cage, for mm-hmm. things that are you know popular because of the TV shows.
Yeah.
And Flash, of course, you mm-hmm. know. And obviously, the more popular the show is.
Mm-hmm.
the more people come and look for their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big believer that a lot of the success of comic books in the last 10 years
mm-hmm.
has been to the fact that a lot of the media exposure of superheroes, you know, we've taken characters like Iron Man and made them mainstream. Yeah. It's not for geeks anymore. It's, you know, one of the things I used to describe it to people is 10 years ago, you could have walked out on the street, ask any old person, male, female, doesn't matter, and ask them, do you know who Groot is?
Mm-hmm.
And most of them will go, huh? I have no idea. But now you can walk out on the street, ask any woman
mm-hmm.
who Groot is, and they go, oh yeah, that's a cute little tree thing from Guardians of the Galaxy movie. So it's comics, thanks to the success of, you know, a lot of the TV shows, Marvel and DC,
mm-hmm.
Have moved comic book stuff into the mainstream. And that, you know, that's, so, but that's predominantly who I cater the comic books to. It's the mainstream. So, you know, your Marvel and Marvel and DC superhero types.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And then, you know, do you carry like, any, trade paperbacks or hardcovers?
We do, but I don't carry a whole lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly what I bring in trade paperbacks are, books where we sold out of very quickly. I think my experience has been not to. I've been to shops that have had huge walls of trade paperbacks, but I don't have the space for that. quite frankly, at an 800 square foot store, you don't have the space for a lot of storage. So I've been very particular about what kind of trade paperbacks we bring in. So most of what we bring in are the ones are titles that have sold out very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the early Rebirth stuff, you know, first volume ones or volume twos of any of the Rebirth issues, are stuff I try to keep in stock.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Walking Dead still does well, so we try to keep a nice run of Walking Dead trade paperbacks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because I know before we did the interview, I was looking around and it's like, I think you got almost all the volumes of the Walking Dead trade paperback. It's like, that's pretty good.
We try to keep them in stock. There's always, you know, there's always somebody looking for them. And I never know exactly which issue to keep. So I just keep all of them.
That's pretty good. I'm going to ask, can you like describe your back issue bins? Because I know you have some in the store. Can you just describe them like briefly, what they hold and stuff like that?
Sure. We have a couple of several boxes of back issue bins. And what we do is we discount them. So they're on a buy two, get the next two free. So you pay for the cover price for the first two issues, mm-hmm. then you get the next two issues free.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a very effective way of selling older mm-hmm. comics. In addition to those bins, we also have what we call classic comics. They're older issues that are not necessarily valuable. I mean, mm-hmm, you know, X Factor 23, you know, things like that. But they're older stuff, and sometimes people want to read older books. Mm-hmm. So they're in there as well. And we only charge $2 for those books, and they're also part of the buy two, get two free.
Mm-hmm.
So the older books, the classic ones, they do go fast. We do have to replenish that pretty quickly. In addition to that, we have your standard higher value books, which we keep on the side,
mm-hmm.
Which has grown quite a lot. When the shop first opened, we mm-hmm. had, I believe, like in the first year, we had one box of old comics that you know, comics were books that were worth like $5 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have 8 boxes of this stuff. It's getting so that it's actually difficult for customers to run through the entire lot. But some of them enjoy that. So I think we'll.
So I'm going to ask. So your $2 classic comic book bins, is that from your personal collection, or is it, you know, people come in, go, hey, I just want to get rid of these.
Since we do buy comics, what happens a lot is, somebody will bring in, you know, say, four boxes worth of comics, four mm-hmm. long boxes worth of comics. I'll go through them looking for things that we might want to sell or what we might pick up. And out of the four boxes, maybe I'll pick up a handful, depending on how old the books are. You know, if mm-hmm. you're looking at books in the 90s, typically, even with four boxes, I'll probably only buying a handful of mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and depending how much back stock we have of those kinds of things, then I may also offer the customer, you know, here, you know, $20 or $25 for a long box if mm-hmm. you know, if you don't want to keep it just to get rid of the stuff at your house.
Yeah.
I also tell people that, that a lot of times libraries will take donations if they want to find a way to get rid of this, some of these books, if they're just taking up space or collecting dust in somebody's closet. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times that's how we get our back stock of books. So.
Okay. Well, yeah.
There's never a shortage. It's always, we've always got a lot of back stock of the classic books.
Okay. I'm going to be asking a couple questions. John Mayo has a couple questions. Do you have a pull list service?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Did that very early on because, one of the things, for example, on Wednesdays, mm-hmm. the shop closes at 8 o'clock on most nights. Well, as we've said earlier, that people who come from town, that could be a long ride. Sometimes people can't make it by 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And so, very early on, we had a pull service, which is also a subscription service because understanding that we don't carry a lot of the more esoteric titles. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted something like that, you could also subscribe to that and it'd go in your pull list. So.
Mm-hmm. And then his next question was, does it help you to know, if customers let you know what they want in advance during the ordering cycle?
It does help. There is no doubt about it. I think that's one of the trickiest things about running a comic book shop is trying to gauge demand.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to get stuck with too many leftover comic books at the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, you don't want to sell out of stuff too quickly.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's, I believe a lot of comic book shop owners will tell you that that's the trick is gauging that.
Yeah.
I try to get a feel from customer input, as far as that, what to order. But I think the best gauge for me is what actually sells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people can tell me, oh yeah, I like this comic book or that comic book all they want. But if they're not buying the comic book, it really doesn't do me much good. So, mm-hmm. what moves off the shelf, that's pretty much what we gauge our orders mm-hmm. on. So.
So I'm going to ask off the cuff here is that, for about 5 years now, do you think you have a pretty good handle on what titles to bring in and how much then?
No. I have thought I had gauged everything pretty well. I'll give you an example. This just took us by surprise recently, too. Batman Annual number 2.
Oh, yes.
Okay. As a general rule, our annuals sell just slightly under
mm-hmm.
what regular books sell for. Mm-hmm. Maybe slightly people are slightly less interested in Batman's a fairly popular comic mm-hmm. book, so I bring in a fair amount of Batman, even the annuals, but I don't bring in a whole lot of it.
Yes. Yes.
It blew off the shelf, man. And I have a feeling it blew off the shelf at pretty much every store because I started getting calls from people who were not regular shoppers mm-hmm. here asking if we had that book in.
Mm-hmm.
And, when that happens, I know, everybody else around me sold out too. But yeah, you think you know something. You think a pattern had developed itself. And then all of a sudden, sometimes there's just, it just comes out of nowhere sometimes, honestly.
Oh, no, yeah. Because, I understand. Because, normally annuals are not the big sellers. It's one of those kind of throwaway stories,
It's like, it's part of the book. So if you're collecting it, you really got to have the annuals. But then, the storylines usually aren't the same. They're not written by the same people frequently. They're not even arted, drawn by the same people. But...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this one, yeah. It was a good read, by the way.
Okay.
It was a very good read. As I read a lot of Batman myself now,
uh-huh.
It's like, oh, yeah, I can see why that would sell out.
Well, my understanding, Julius, I'm going to let you know, is that I think, and I don't even know when this episode is going to come out, but I think there's rumors on the internet, I think Batman 38 might be another hot book. That one by Tom King. And I think he might touch on the Batman origin. I'm not sure. If I can find the article, I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because
that's like an anticipation.
I'm just asking, do you provide any other service to comic book customers? Like, is there a rewards program? I know you're also a certified CGC.
Yep.
representative? Yeah, okay.
I guess what you call it is a CGC drop-off site. So that's okay. One of the services we offer is you can drop off your books here, and then we'll pack the stuff for you and send it up to CGC for you. That way you don't have to actually go through the membership at CGC to get that all done. So that's one service we provide here for our customers. We do have a member loyalty program, and not just for comic books. That applies to games as well. Okay. In that program, you earn points from shopping and from participating in store events. When you earn enough points, you raise in level, very much like D&D. And then as you gain in level, you get special store rewards, special discounts, and things like that. In addition to that, we just started a service just last month to offer consignment. So we now can sell books and actually anything, including games, miniatures, things like that, on consignment. So, though it's been open, we have yet to have our first customer, so we're still but it's available.
I'm sorry, can you go a little, are you okay going back and going into a little detail about the consignment program and stuff?
Oh, sure, yeah. So how our consignment program will work is you bring your books here or bring whatever you want to sell here. We do ask that it be something somewhat related to what we sell. Since we don't do sports cards, we ask for people not to bring sports cards to be sold. So we'll advertise your product on Facebook. We'll advertise it on our in-store advertising. We do have TVs in the shop that run advertising. You can sell your books here by bid or by instant purchase or both. And then we charge 20% of the final sale price as our store's commission with a minimum of $10.
Okay.
So it would behoove you to organize your lots, and you can organize the lots however way you want. But you'd want to organize it so that you probably $50 or more lots, just so you don't lose out on the $10 minimum thing.
Yeah.
Items can be on bid for 30 days, and then if your item hasn't sold in 30 days, you can we charge $5. And then you can take the item back or change it or relist it. We will not allow you to make changes to the listing once you submit the listing. The only thing you can do once you submit it is remove it, in which case we'll just charge you the $5. But we don't want people, changing the price as the bidding goes on. So, you won't be able to change anything once you've actually got it up.
Can I just ask, what was the origin to, how'd you come up with this?
Well, the consignment program, we do buy comics. So we use games as well. So it hasn't been a priority for us, but it occurred to us that, from time to time, I'll get people who come in here with CGC books, for example, fairly valuable books. I mean, realistically, we can't offer them the kind of money that they could potentially make from those books. So rather than make them an offer that just would be practically insulting. Then it said, well, how about if we do a consignment program? Other shops do consignment programs. And so, another thing is 40K. Warhammer 40K, a lot of people will have large painted armies, which are actually quite valuable if you look at them on eBay. So that's another item that, I couldn't pay you enough for it. How much is a painting worth? That's what we do for the books. We are still waiting for our first customer. We've talked to several people, and several people have already expressed interest in selling some kind of books, comics. And it does appeal to comic book people, I guess, primarily because comic book people are accustomed to selling stuff on consignment or on eBay or something.
So the next two questions is coming from Eric from Cowcast. And he just wants to know, what is the percentage? Just give a rough percentage of the business, comics versus gaming.
Roughly, I would say that comic books accounts for about 20% of our sales here.
Oh, okay.
We are predominantly a gaming store. Space-wise, like I said, it's about two-thirds gaming and one-third comics. But sales-wise, it's an even wider gap than that. I think we about 20% in comic book sales and about 80% everything else. Of all the products we have here, I would say Warhammer 40K, or Magic the Gathering, There are two biggest sellers in the shop, and they kind of compete with each other for top slot in the shop. But each of those products alone is probably equal to what we sell in comic books.
Okay. And his Eric's next question is, what market trends do you see in the store? Like, you know, Marvel sales that go up and down. The Doomsday series, Doomsday Clock versus the Metal series at DC, you know, indie, or, you know, or do you see like people more jumping into the gaming side, you know?
Well, as far as trends, board games, for example, has been going up every year. A lot more people are playing board games and have been more interested in getting into board games. Dungeons and Dragons never fails. I bring in, and I am a small store, but I bring in about four to six copies of the Player's Handbook every couple of weeks just to keep up with people who are buying Dungeons and Dragons stuff.
Wow.
Yes.
So every time you bring it in, they pretty much sell out?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow. Man, okay.
I just brought in six Player's Handbooks over the weekend, and we had two in stock here, so that was eight. I am down to four today. That means we've sold four between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah.
So that's how crazy that the game
so
is.
It's just to give you guys an idea, because I'm doing this interview on Monday, December 11th. So basically, in the last 3 days, you sold four of the books, right?
Yes. Four Player's Handbooks. And Player's Handbook is the start for if you want to play Dungeons & Dragons. So it tells me how – and that's – sometimes when you have that many people shopping for it, that's an indication that very soon down the line, you're going to be selling more stuff because Player's Handbook is where you start. But often, you know, you'll buy monster manuals and, you know, maps for D&D, figures for the D&D game. You know, there's dice. You can't have enough dice. I don't know anybody that's happy with just one set of dice. But the trends in comic books are the most interesting because, you know, it's kind of delving into the mind of the customer much more deeply. There's definitely a noticeable increase in particular sales when a character has been very successful in the movies or in the television shows.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it is hands down noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
DC particularly right now has been very strong on sale. Rebirth has been a boon to DC, and we're probably bringing in more DC now than Marvel just because of the amount of demand for DC books.
Wow, okay.
Now Marvel's still strong, don't get me wrong, but DC has made leaps and bounds in the last 6 months or last year for Rebirth.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm just going to ask, is it because of the price point? Because I know most of their issues are $2.99.
The price point may have something to do with it, but I would have to say that based on the customers that I've spoken to about the books, I think more people nowadays are attracted to DC because they've been showing a higher quality of artwork and a lot of a better thought out plot lines and stories, and I think that's what's catching people. I think people are a lot sharper than we give them credit for. I think they know a good book when they see one.
Yeah.
And you know, and that tends to fall, and then they'll stay with a book for a while as long as it's, you know, continues to have a good creative team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll stay with Batman or Action Comics or Justice League or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are very interesting trends when you try to watch out for them.
All right. Thanks, Julius. Now, before we finish this, the questions on the comic section, I got to ask you one thing. We know we've talked about this before. Your Avengers collection. I got to hear about this. You have to tell us about this.
Yes. Well, that goes way back. Avengers is one of my favorite comic books. So it is the first book I started collecting, and it is, I am very proud to say, one of the few titles where I have just about a complete run. I'm missing three like insignificant issues, but I got almost all the critical ones. I just, you know. So that's from one till current, and I'm very, very pleased that I've already had my wife ask, you know, because of course I will tell her how much my collection is worth, and mm-hmm. she goes, "Oh, great, that our son can have it when he gets older." I go, "No way, no way." the other comic book that I mentioned to you earlier too that I'm very proud of is Tales of Suspense. Mm-hmm. I have a near complete run of the modern Marvel Tales of Suspense mm-hmm. series. I am only missing 4 books from mm-hmm. Tales of Suspense. Sadly, it is the first 4. Tales of Suspense 39 is now a little bit cost prohibitive for me without sacrificing my son's college education. So, but yes, I still enjoy collecting. I still do. I still love it.
All right. Thanks, Julius. I'm going to say we're going to stop right now. I'm going to let you attend to some customers here. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll be right back. Okay. All right, guys. Thank you. We're back. Now, you know, I'm going to talk to Julius. You know, like, you know, he said, you know, most of his shop, they sell games. So I'm just going to be asking Julius about the gaming part. So, you know, Julius, how did you get started in, like, Dungeons & Dragons or, and correct me if I'm wrong, like, role-playing games and stuff like that?
Well, I got into a bunch of different games growing up as a kid. But Dungeons & Dragons, actually, I was introduced to it when I was in middle school. If I remember correctly, I was 8th grade at the time. And then somebody in the school was into it and became the dungeon master. And me and my group of friends became his first players. Had a great time. And then after that, I really got into role-playing. But even before role-playing games came around, I had started playing tabletop board games, mm-hmm. mostly of a military type, which was actually popular back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So I actually got caught the tail end of that. So I had played military board games probably, I would say, like 3 or 4 years before I played D&D.
Oh, okay.
But then, yeah, D&D quite naturally mm-hmm. developed after that. So
I'm going to say, those military games, was it like Risk? Was it like Battleship?
Those would be a simplification.
Okay, no, yes. No, yeah.
But yes, yes. They were games that they're not as popular today as they used to be back in the 70s, unfortunately, because they're actually my favorite type of game. Mm-hmm. But they were board games based on real life. They were billed as simulations rather than games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you would take a game, for example, one of my first games was called Alexander.
Oh,
and
okay.
you took Alexander's army and you had pieces for all the different soldiers in his army, and then you fought against the Persians at a place called Gaugamela.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my very first ever board game, which mm-hmm. I think I was 11 years old or 12 years old when I started playing that. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was... But sadly, those kinds of games, you know, I've heard the jokes where, you know, board games, board games, you know. But yeah, there's not as many people that play that mm-hmm. type of game. But board games as a whole... Mm-hmm. are so much more popular now than they were even when I was growing up. With games like, you know, Takenoko and King of New York, King of Tokyo, mm-hmm. Zombicide, you know, all of these mm-hmm. tabletop games that are Munchkin. sorry, Munchkin, forgot about you. Yeah, so very, very popular. A lot of people play them. And I think, you know, that there was a big worry for a long time among some game people that... video games and online games would take over and replace yeah. these kinds of games.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And it wasn't, and you know, it hasn't actually happened. It hasn't really, it has changed a little bit of the nature of the tabletop game industry, but it hasn't, I don't think it has really destroyed it. I think that, you know, these types of games, there's always going to be a place for it because you can't, like, I've played online games. I've played Halo mm-hmm. and you know, Call of Duty and all that. But I'll never forget the time where I had the most fun with Halo was when we networked several TVs together in my friend's house, and we were all there playing Halo together.
Oh, it's nice.
Yes. that was the best experience. You know, other than that, mm-hmm. yeah, it's okay. It's an okay way to waste time or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, you don't get that social interaction off of video gaming like you can if you were actually playing live and in person with mm-hmm. people. And
yeah.
I think that's part of the appeal of it. And that's still what appeals me to playing games is mm-hmm. the social interaction of it, you know.
So. Yeah. And then, what games are you playing today?
Well, let's see. Wow, that's a hard question. I am still a big... my favorite games still continue to be historical board games. They still make them. There's still companies that make them. But it is harder to find players to play with those games. They tend to also be a little bit more complicated and lengthy. So they're not the kind of games you can just jump people into. You know. But I do play 40K a lot as well. I play historical miniature games, Flames of War, various types of Napoleon and Civil War type games, Test of Honor for samurai. I don't actually, strangely, I don't run a D&D game myself. I run Pathfinder, which is, of course, a role-playing game also, but it's a slightly different one. I play a fair number of the board games that we have here. But those would, and I, of course, I also dabble in Magic the Gathering, not competitively. My decks would get annihilated by most people, but I do play for fun. And it is fun to play. So, and there's always something new. One of the things we're anxiously anticipating is the release of Star Wars Legion, which is a miniatures game like 40K, but of the Star Wars universe. So it'll be little miniatures, unpainted miniatures of Star Wars, and then you can play those on a battlefield like the one we use for 40K.
Oh my god.
Yes.
So when is that coming out?
I believe the expected release date is January, though you know, that it's such a new product that we're going to have to like double check and make sure that it's still on track.
But,
yeah.
Okay. Are you preparing for that to be a top seller here at the store, or are you going to slowly bring it in?
I anticipate that it's going to sell well. Though as far as miniatures games, which is what that is, it's hard to unseat Warhammer 40K as the top seller for miniatures games. There are so much more people that play Warhammer 40K. It's easier to find people to play with. You know, they just recently revamped their rules to the newest edition, to 8th edition, but the new rules are easier to learn. They're more balanced and fair so that every army has a chance of winning. So yeah, so those kinds of things make 40K a very tough one to unseat from the number one slot.
I don't know, that Star Wars Legion sounds pretty good. I mean, try to do a huge, you know, Battle of Hoth scene, you know, that'd be great.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, it's going to be cool. It's going to be absolutely cool. So yeah, we're anticipating that that will hit pretty well, but like I said, 40K, it may need a few years to be able to compete on the same level as 40K.
Okay. Now, I know you said that Magic and Warhammer is your top-selling games here in the store. That's correct,
right? That's correct, yeah.
Okay. And then, like, do you sell a lot of the Magic packs?
Yes. That's probably the number one source of Magic sales is, you know, individual packs. We do hold tournaments pretty regularly every week, at least one every week. And those, of course, have entry fees, and those also contribute to, you know, that also is part of Magic being a top seller in the shop, because it's strong enough a game that it supports weekly activity like that, and weekly activity that generates income, because they're all, you know, there's entry fees involved, and people pay the entry fees and are more than happy to play in all these events. So,
about how many people come up to these weekly Magic events?
Depends on the type of format, because Magic does have several different formats that can be run on any given week. Sometimes we've timed it wrong, where there is a weekend where, you know, there was big carnivals or something where our turnout was lower than anticipated. But I'd say on average, our shop does anywhere between 8 to maybe 16 players, depending on you know, the format and how busy a night it is for everybody. So.
Yeah. And then I know also Warhammer is also your other top seller, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then I know I see around the shop here you sell the ships, the, I guess, the figures. That's correct, right?
That is correct. Yeah. Okay. Warhammer 40K includes all of the, you know, not just the armies themselves, but it also includes the books, the paints that people use, the tools, the paintbrushes. Primer and all the dice, even, because a lot of people, you know, when you're playing 40K, sometimes you need as many as, you know, 40 dice in just to make one attack. So people will buy bulk dice for that.
Oh, okay. And then, like you said, you also have the paint supplies here, the brushes, and so forth, right?
Yep. It's like I said, 40K is not just a game; it is a lifestyle. So you have to, we have to be able to keep you supplied with everything that you need for the game, mm-hmm. and that definitely includes paints, brushes, sculpting tools, and everything associated with it.
Mm-hmm. Do you hold classes on how to paint? Do you hold classes on how to paint these figures or the ships or any type of instructional thing for Warhammer?
Fortunately for most people, the YouTube has been a wonderful source of this kind of stuff. We do hold two painting clinics a year.
Oh, okay.
We try to space them out evenly so that we'll have one, and then 6 months later we'll have the second one. All the staff here, including myself, paint. So it's easier for us to give advice to people if they have questions. And painting tends to be the most intimidating portion of the hobby. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get, assembling the miniatures usually is no problem. Organizing and playing them usually no problem. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to painting, that's where people get a little scared. So, mm-hmm. And it's not. I can say from personal experience, because I when I got into 40K, I wanted to play, and I wasn't so much of a painter, and my first couple jobs at painting were extremely horrible compared to how I paint today. But you get past that, and once you get past that, then you can kind of start enjoying painting as part of the hobby itself.
Have you seen any, and I'm not trying to say this in a bad way, but have you seen any, creative style painting on ships you're going, wow, I didn't think of that. That looks cool.
Oh, absolutely. All the time. People get very, one of the things about 40K that attracts a lot of people is you don't have to paint the miniatures how it looks on the box. Yeah. You can paint them however you want. If you want, orcs with blue skin, knock yourself out, paint them with blue skin.
Yeah.
So all of the armies in 40K can be painted to however you want. And a lot of people will come up with their own color schemes, their own, they custom make the miniatures. They attach, they cut out parts, they glue new parts in, taken from other boxes, other games even, and make it match. Yeah, it's impressive,
Yeah.
I like, I'm a fairly decent painter, but I'm not an imaginative painter. So, I'm the kind of guy that paints, show me a picture of something and what it's supposed to look like. I can paint the picture. But if you tell me, okay, here's a model, paint it. How? that part I don't do well, but there's a lot of people who are good at it, and I see it here a lot. So, quite impressive.
Wow. Let's see. I know you said, you guys have weekly Magic games. What about for the Warhammer games, your X-Wing fighter games? How often do you guys have that?
All the other games usually get some kind of play at least once a month. Mm-hmm. With Warhammer 40K, there's usually an event once a month. But we also have a league, an in-shop league. It's a membership-driven league, so you have to, pay a membership fee to join. But there's a league here that plays 40K, and they have, they schedule games with each other to play here, and that's not counting that, of course. A lot of the other games we support, there's so many different games, we can only support the main ones, but we do X-Wing once a month, we do HeroClix just about once a month. We do D&D is one of the only other games that we can support weekly. There's a D&D almost every Sunday. And then we'll have certain things, we'll have a board game day, usually about twice a year, two or three times a year. And then we'll have, we've had Final Fantasy, the card game. We've had a special event for that. But some of the other stuff doesn't come up as often because the customer bases, the player bases for those are a little bit smaller. So it's hard to sustain that on a weekly event.
So I'm just going to ask, how much, what's the fee roughly to participate with maybe Magic or the 40K? What's the fee range?
We try not to make it too expensive. Our typical events are $5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for to play. Some Magic events cost more because some of the Magic events you get cards with it.
Oh, okay.
So, and our 40K league, there's a fee to join the league, but once you're in the league, we hold events just for the league members.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And actually your dues in the league partially go back to funding the tournament. So, so while you don't, you pay to join, but you don't pay to play the tournaments.
Yeah.
And the prizes are usually bigger because, you know, we're just turning your entry fee around to make it prizes.
So. Yeah. I'm just asking. So that league, is it a monthly fee or is it an annual?
Annual.
Fee? Oh, yeah. Okay.
And it's, $30 for first time members and $20 for ongoing.
Oh, okay.
So it's not very expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. And then, do you have like a code of conduct while, you know, people are playing the games?
Yes, we definitely have a code of conduct here. The store is designed and geared towards making it family friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that we don't have people who are doing inappropriate things in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't, you know, we don't allow swearing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't allow people to be drunk while playing in the shop for tournaments.
No, yeah.
And in fact, it's the only time we've ever had to eject somebody from the shop was when we had somebody come in to play Magic and she was drunk. So, and she was being not just drunk, but you know. She was being obnoxiously drunk. So,
okay, but still, yeah. So, okay.
And on that event, we were applauded. The other customers here were most pleased that we got rid of her because that was how obnoxious she was.
Okay. No, but that's good. Yeah, that's good.
It doesn't happen often, which is good. I think people understand that we're a family place, and if you want to do that kind of stuff, play someplace else.
Yeah. And then during these leagues or tournaments, you know, just a rough estimate. It's like, what's the ratio for adults to kids? You know, do you see more kids at certain ones or adults?
In all of the events that we have, they're still predominantly adult.
Mm-hmm.
I would say most of our customers are young males, you know, in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
We do have teens,
mm-hmm.
but most of the games that we sell here are geared for 13 and older.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not, teens are not common.
Mm-hmm.
We have probably there's at least a couple of kids in the D&D players groups.
Mm-hmm.
We don't currently have any teens in the 40K group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Magic is the only one where we specifically have a format for kids. There's a gentleman in town. His name's Sean. He organizes youth groups to play Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the places where they play is here.
Oh, okay.
So they meet here, and we have once a month we have a tournament only for youth.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be high school age or younger to play.
Yeah.
In fact, it's so sad because one of the leaders of that group from last year graduated, so he is no longer eligible to play in the tournaments, but he still comes down and watches.
I'm just going to go back, touch upon, you know, I know, like you said, that one of the things that you like about, you know, the Warhammer 40K, the Magic, is the socialization, you know. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Like, is it really great to see people interact? Is it?
Well, it is important for people to interact. I think, you know, by our nature, gamers are already somewhat, you know, socially awkward, I think is the correct way to phrase it. You know, we're not the school jocks. We're not the most popular kids in the school or whatever. And I think it's important for people like us to have an outlet, a place where you can gather with other people who are the same like you and not feel like you're being judged for anything. And I think that's one of the things places like stores like ours can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. And when we run the tournaments here, and I look around at the room, and I look at the faces of all the people, and most of them are smiling, even in the midst of a tough tournament. You know, then I know I'm doing something okay. You know, I have gone to tournaments on the mainland, huge Magic tournaments. I've gone to I went to this one in California, and there were well over 100 players.
Yeah,
big giant, you know, like auditorium style gaming. And it was quiet. It was quiet because they were at that level. Magic is very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people were playing against each other, not saying a word to each other. This room with 100 plus people, we were making more noise in here with 12 than they were with 100. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, okay, I understand, you know, the competitive scene can do that to people, mm-hmm. but it's not what we want to do here.
Yeah.
You know, it's a game, people. Yeah. You know, it's here to be enjoyed. It's, yeah. it's supposed to be for fun. So, you know, we focus more on being able to have fun.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes it's easy to lose track of that when you're playing a competitive game.
Yeah.
We have to we just gentle nudge people to remember, hey, remember, it's a game.
No, but that's good. Yeah. Yeah, so. That's great. Because like he says, you know, you want to hear people laughing. You want to see people smiling, not going.
Absolutely.
Okay. You know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. And that's, and we get that here. So I'm mm-hmm. very pleased about that.
Before I wrap this up, I want to ask you some off the cuff questions. What other comic book conventions have you been on the mainland?
I thought you were going to ask me if I was going to sell my Hulk 181 to you. conventions on the mainland. I actually, when I go on vacation, I always look for conventions to go to because I don't plan my vacations around the convention. I, you know, but if yes. there happens to be a convention where I'm going, I try to make sure I go there. So, on the mainland, the one I have gone to the most frequently is San Diego, of course. Mm-hmm. I have been there 4 times mm-hmm. in the last 20 years or so. Yeah, four or 5 times, I think. So it's the one I've been to the most.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Baltimore Comic Con.
Oh, okay.
Years ago, so it was a very small venue back then. The only redeeming feature it had was the fact that it was close enough to Marvel and DC at the time that, you know, some big wigs came over from Marvel and DC and did some panels, which mm-hmm. was nice. I have actually had the fortune of going to London Comic Con. So I was in London Comic Con a couple mm-hmm. years ago.
Nice.
And that was also very entertaining. Then they like their comics there too. So,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's it. That's it for Comic Con.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. And then, and I know you go to, your store participates or attends the Amazing Hawaii Comic Con, right?
We do.
You guys
do.
For the last 3 years, right?
Yeah. Yes, from the very beginning of when they first came to Hawaii.
Yeah.
So we're very big supporters and very big fans of the Amazing Hawaii Comic Con. So we have a booth there every year.
Okay. And then what do you enjoy... what do you enjoy the most running the store?
That's tough. If I had to say one thing only, I would have to say that it is the social interaction part, because I do get to talk to customers. I can, you know, I get people that can walk in here. I can say, "Hey, have you seen Justice League yet? What do you think of it?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of social interaction is. It's important. And even at my age and, you know, especially more so now, you know, I have a child, I have family, but, you know, there's still a geeky part of me that wants to do geeky type of things some of the time. So what better place to geek out than at a place like this? So,
let's see. Where would you like to see the store a year from now?
A year from now? Well, we'll still be at the exact same spot. We're on lease, so
okay.
A year from now, we'll still be here. But near future, well, we definitely want to look at a bigger place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the limitations of an 800 square foot shop become too apparent when a lot of people show up for magic and we're squeezed wall to wall with magic players.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the next thing I want to look for is a place with more space.
Okay.
Hopefully less rent, but definitely more space.
Uh-huh. Let's see. Okay, so any upcoming events for 2018?
Besides Amazing Hawaii Comic Con, off the top of my head, I don't have anything projected. Mm-hmm. You know, other than the ongoing slew of gaming stuff, because there's always there's always a new game, there's always some kind of new thing coming up. But event wise, I don't see anything down the line. We have can I trust your listeners not to talk? We have talked about the possibility of doing a small gaming event. Convention would be a little bit over the top, I think, but like a gaming event where people can come down and play a variety of tournament style games and bring their own games and things like that, and held in a more public venue
Mm-hmm.
Rather than inside the shop.
So yeah.
We've talked about something like that. And if we can get it together, we may do that next year. That's a possibility.
So that's one. At least that's one goal for next year. Or if not, something in the next couple of years.
Yeah, within the near future, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. But also, too, you're also going to be celebrating your fifth anniversary next year. That's right.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Next year will be number five.
Yeah.
I am not allowed to say yet what we're doing for the fifth anniversary, but it will involve, as I mentioned earlier, we do have a loyalty program for the shop, so there will be something special involving all our highest level loyalty members. So
that's good, yeah.
Stay tuned for more.
All right, Julius, is there anything else you want to add before we wind this up?
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me, Jason. It's always... great to be able to share my experiences and my feelings with somebody who understands the industry, mm-hmm. and hope your listeners will appreciate what I have to contribute to the industry, mm-hmm. there. So.
All right, now Julius, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much. And then again, Julius, what's your store name again?
It is Westside Comics and Games in Kapolei, Hawaii.
Okay. And then where can people find you on social media?
You can find us at Facebook under Westside Comics and Games, Westside being one word. Also on the web at www.westsidecomicsandgames.com. No spaces, no dashes.
All right. Thank you, Julius. So listeners, if you guys are vacationing in Hawaii and you're on the west side of Oahu, you know, please stop by Westside Comics and Games. You know, Julius, you know, thank you very much. You know, I have to tell the listeners, you know, yeah, 5 years ago, I think it pretty much came when pretty much close when the store opened up.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I moved over to Dragon's Lair a couple years ago because they're more focused on more comics. That was more what I was going for. Yeah. But you know, one thing I loved about this store is that, you know, you're great customer service. You know, you're always friendly when you came in. The atmosphere was always comfortable. And you know, now it's like, you know I keep mentioning the last couple of years, yeah, I'll stop by. Yeah. But the store, I mean, I know in this small space, the store has really grown. It really has.
It actually has, you know, I mean, I think you were here the first year that the shop was open, and back then, you know, we were not wall to wall packed with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have made a conscious decision here not to overload the shelves and the spaces, so that you have that customers have ample space to walk around and look around.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
But even with that, you know, like the wall is like nearly full now. So yes, space is something we'll need very soon.
No, but the other thing too, I also like is that. You have the wide flat screen behind the counter that also advertises, you know, your scheduled games are. I also noticed that you guys are having like the DC, you're like promoting DC Comics too, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things. This was another one of those interesting observations is we had a calendar at the shop, which was, you know, we had a printed piece of paper with a calendar with all our events listed on it, which we tacked onto a cork board in the front of the shop. So it's nice and easy to see, and easy enough to see. But you know what? When you put it on a TV, there's something about the TV. People notice it more. People watch it, and people wait for the thing to come back around to see what time the event is. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So there's something noticeable about it, yeah.
So I'm going to ask, so did that help, you know, like, bring more customers for, like, the gaming stuff?
I don't know if that specifically brought more people in, but it people were definitely noticing it.
Okay.
Because, you know, I would have people that I'd be helping at the counter. And, of course, the TV is behind me, so I don't know what's playing. So I'm helping a customer, and he'll tell me, like, oh, okay, well, I'll see you guys this Friday at the tournament, the one that you guys have on your board. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay.
That's good.
Yeah, so, really you good. Know, so, yeah, it does work. It works very well.
You know, so again, Julius, you know, thank you very much for your time. You know, John and Eric, you know, thank you very much for your questions. And, you know, and a big mahalo to John and Drew. You know, thank you for letting me contribute to your guys' podcast. And, you know, to all the listeners, thank you very much for your time. I know there are times we have to stop, because I'm interviewing Julius, while his shop is open. Thank you very much for all the pauses and so forth. You know, so again, listeners, thank you very much. Until next time, aloha.
That was my interview with Julius Idano of Westside Comics and Games. Now, even though, you know, we laughed about him having this dream of one day opening up a comic book slash game shop, you know, when he was a teenager, you know, it showed he already had a vision, you know, to have a safe haven where gamers and comic book fans like myself of all ages, you know, to hang out and most importantly, to have fun. And he's accomplished that. You know, this year marks the store's fifth anniversary. The store opened up on August 5th, 2013. You know, I want to wish Julius and his store an early happy fifth anniversary. Julius, may your store continue to live long and prosper. You know, and if you're vacationing in Hawaii, please stop by the store or visit their website, www.westsidecomicsandgames.com, or check out their Facebook page, facebook.com/westsidecomicsandgames. Now, I want to give out some big mahalos or thank yous, you know, to people who made this episode possible. The first thank you goes to John Meal. John, thank you very much for letting me contribute to your podcast. You know, again, John, thank you very much. And thank you for putting together this episode. Thank you very much, John. If you are a new listener to John's podcast, you know, please check out John's weekly comic spotlight where he and his co-host James, you know, review three current release titles. The second thank you I want to give to Julius. Julius, thank you very much for your time and your patience in doing this interview. You know, the third thank you goes out to Eric from Kawabunga Comics. You know, Eric, thank you very much for, you know, sending me some questions for this interview. Thank you very much, Eric. And if you guys get a chance, you know, please check out Eric's podcast. He and his co-owner James of Kawabunga Comics, they have a podcast called The Cowcast, and that's Cowcast with a K. And their podcast, you know, focus on the behind the scenes on running a comic book store. And lastly, I want to thank you, the listeners, for your time in listening to this episode. Until next time, aloha.
I want to thank Jason for doing that interview. It was a lot of fun to listen to. It's a store I'd like to visit sometime. It sounds like a really cool store. I also want to remind listeners that if you've got a retailer that you'd like to spotlight and do an interview on, send me an email and let me know and we'll set something up. I obviously can't get out to all these stores. I don't know a lot of these places and stuff, but I love learning about new shops this way. So if you'd like to interview your retailer, it's pretty easy to do. Really, all you need is a smartphone. You can record it on there. That's exactly what I believe Jason did. And spotlight the shop you shop at. It's a great way to get to know your retailer a lot better, a great way to showcase your retailer, and it'd be fun to do. So if you're interested in doing a retailer spotlight like this and the couple that Jason have done and whatnot, just get in contact with me and we'll set something up and I'll figure out when we could slot it in the release schedule. I find these a lot of fun and I love listening to these things and stuff. So again, if you're interested, please get in touch with me on that. Again, Jason, thank you for doing it. It's fun learning about the different comic shops and comic culture over in Hawaii. And I'd love to expand that to other parts of both the United States, stateside, or continental side, or whatever you would call that, and the rest of the world. If you've got a store and you're overseas and stuff, I think that'd be a lot of fun to hear from retailers like that. So again, hope you all enjoyed this episode, and Jason, thanks for doing it.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.